you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Conventional wisdom is that manufacturing has mostly gone overseas, and a lot of it has, but not all. Indeed, manufacturing appears to be growing right here in the Bay Area. Actually, I was told off the air, it never really left. There's always been a fair amount here, shocking to me at least. And that's any kind of an increase that we're experiencing is driven at least in part by the increased cost of employees in China and probably other places around the world. The taxpayers now are funding a Bay Area initiative called Design It, Make It, Ship It. And it's going to provide free or low-cost training and I think helpful access to jobs in this new area. And so I think you guys, whether you or someone you love is interested in a career in manufacturing, thought that was no longer possible, but simply, or even if you're just simply interested in hearing what's really new and not obvious in the world of Bay Area employment, I think you're going to enjoy this segment. I've got the right guys here with me to give the scoop on what is new in manufacturing jobs in the Bay Area are Randy Tillery and Mark Martin. Now, Randy is the Senior Dean of Workforce and Economic Development for the Contra Costa Community College District. Before that, he was, as a consultant, he helped create large multi-agency workforce initiatives for low-income folks in the East Bay. He's worked for social service agencies, the public workforce system, blah, 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 blah. He's got a BA in liberal arts from Evergreen State. Oh, the funky school I went. I played around in their organic garden. And he's an ABD in social anthropology at UT Austin. But no, don't let you think because he's at UT Austin. It was at UT Austin that he's there. No, he lives right here in Berkeley. And Randy Tillery, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Great. Thank you, Marty. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. And Mark Martin is Director of Advanced Manufacturing Workforce Development at Laney College here in Oakland. And he works with other community colleges, universities, industry organizations, and to be fair, more blah, 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 blah. And he also, I got to say, he runs something called iDesign programs. These are two-week-long, hands-on engineering and manufacturing immersion programs for high school students here in the Bay Area, San Francisco and Oakland particularly. Before that, he worked in product development and manufacturing of medical devices for pain reduction, ICU monitoring, blood analysis, mass customization of consumer products, sensor systems, which are really a huge booming field, companies he worked for like TI, HP, and all that stuff. He's got two master's degrees from MIT, a PhD in mechanical engineering from Stanford. Mark Martin, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much, Marty.
All right, enough of that bio stuff. Let's get right to it. Let's say I am somebody who would like to work in manufacturing. Let's start by, my listeners tend to be 30 to 70. So let's say I'm this midlife dude or woman, doesn't matter, who's 30, 40, 50, 60. And, you know, I've always kind of liked being, I was more visually oriented, like to work with my hands, build, create, fix, et cetera. But I don't have experience. I'm a typical KELW listener. I have a bachelor's degree in, you know, in psychology or women's studies or something like that. Any advice for me?
Well, I think one of the things that you can do is you can look around and see what the opportunities are for gaining some knowledge or getting some experience with manufacturing or hands-on activities. And I think there's actually some opportunities here in San Francisco and the Bay Area, such kind of companies or organizations such as Tech Shop. There's the Crucible over in Oakland. So there's opportunities to take kind of short-term, small training classes or just kind of get-to-know classes around manufacturing. But then longer-term, there's certainly a lot of opportunities in the community colleges. And so there's a lot of different courses that people can take there to get their hands kind of wet with this.
So let's say I want to get more specific. Let's say, you know, when I think of manufacturing, I think of a sweltering, hot, like iron foundry or, you know, clanging, carcinogenic, yucko places. Is there a particular sweet spot or two that is a particularly maybe pleasant environment in which to do manufacturing and where the jobs are growing?
I think there's a lot of different opportunities in that area. I think people have this perception of manufacturing as being this, you know, this dirty, this difficult job. And I think the thing that we see here in the types of manufacturing jobs in the United States, or they really are more about using your brain and using the tools and technology to help create things. So, you know, machining careers, there's work happening at, we're working at Laney College, and other community colleges are working with companies, organizations such as East Bay Mud, which do water and wastewater, provide those for every time you turn on the tap, you know, your water comes out. There's people behind that making that happen. So there's machining careers where you're in a very clean environment, maintaining the equipment that allows that to happen. There's also CNC, computer numerically controlled machines, which are more, you know, they're computer-based and allows people to make items. And again, in a very clean environment. I've seen machine shops that are cleaner than, you know, any office work environment that you go into.
I want to turn to you in a minute, Randy. But I want to go to the, going to the well.
Absolutely.
Okay. So first of all, a lot of people don't know what machining is, and we don't think of clean environments and wastewater. We think of sewage treatment. You know, so tell us what machining is and how would it apply to a wastewater treatment plant, and what would the work environment be? Would it not involve crap?
Well, no, because machining is actually cutting metal. So that's okay. Where, you know, just like if you've ever taken a wood shop class, you're cutting wood, but machining involves the cutting of metal. And so what happens is in the water and wastewater facilities, they have pumps and valves and different equipment that need to be maintained. And so what happens is those items, when they break down or need maintenance, they're brought into the shop. And the shop is not, you know, it may be in the same area as the water, wastewater actually treatment, but the shop itself, they bring it in and they maintain this equipment.
Okay. Now you said it requires intelligence. First thing you said, you know, it requires a brain.
Yes.
So teach me about this. Now, let's say I'm working at this wastewater plant and there is this valve that's 20 years old and it's encrusted with, let's just say, stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's therefore corroded. And now I've got to machine it. I've got to cut away the bad metal so it goes down to the good metal. And then I'm going to paint it with a rust-proof stuff. Where is the intelligence required here?
It's the diagnosis of what the problem is. I mean, you may think it's just a matter of cutting metal away, but there's actually, this system, this pump or this valve, you have to look at and figure out what it is, where the problem is. And then once you figure out what the problem occurs, is whether or not there's a frictional element here that's causing the problem, or some worn metal that you have to repair, it's how do you actually repair it? How do you come about and do that? And do it in a way that's both efficient and can utilize the part, well for, the future. So it really takes kind of a diagnosis capabilities to figure out what the problems are.
Okay. And so let's say, I've majored in sociology. You know, again, we're staying with our, I'm 40 year old. Let's say I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, of course, but it doesn't matter. A man or woman, I'm 40 years old. I majored in sociology. I've been kind of bouncing around in job after job, never really found what I want. But, this is kind of intriguing to me. If I go to you talked about the tech shop and the crucible. I know you practice free welding. You make you make little sculptures and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I know. You know, are there – I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that these water treatment plants have a lot of these machinists. There aren't that many needed to if I go through all that, and then I'm going to go to community college for a couple of years of training, which again is lost income time. How viable am I going to be as a 43-year-old sociology major who's gone to the crucible and community college to actually get hired? Randy, you want to take that or?
Well, it's not always a 4-year degree that's actually
2 years.
A 2-year degree that's going to get you there. So, particularly if you have a strong educational foundation already, we have one semester, 1 year, a variety of sort of certificate opportunities for people that really allow them to get into a new industry relatively quickly and efficiently. I mean, I think one of the misnomers is sort of Mark addressed in terms of this kind of work is it's not just things like machining and plant operations, although that's a big part of it. It's things like doing yeast cultures in a biotechnology company. And we're really folks who have strong critical thinking skills, have had some professional experience, have the ability to actually function as problem solvers in a manufacturing process. Those are very highly valued skills. Now, one of our challenges and goals is to help people recognize the skills they're bringing with them. So often someone who's changing a career, who may have worked for 20 years, lost their job, they have a bachelor's degree, they have a lot of skills that maybe they haven't been able to quantify that could be very useful to them moving into a new area. part of our job is really kind of help them translate that.
So, Randy, so if I am that person, and let's start with this. This is a three-part question, but let's start with part one. Part one is, you know, we live in an era where people love top 10 lists, top 5 lists. If you had to give, you know, we've talked about machining a little bit. You mentioned in passing biotech, yeast culture, various, you know, biotech manufacturing. If you had to list the top 5 what I guess we call the mid-level careers that require a 6-month or a year certificate program, and it's viable career-wise, you're not dealing in a smelly, carcinogenic, you know, clanging environment, what would be your top 5? And then I'm going to ask you the same question. So, Randy, what are your top 5? Viable and in viable employment, where there's a relatively large number of jobs.
So I think industrial maintenance, I think biotechnology, I think medical device manufacturing, I think process technologies. We're looking at new sort of 18-week or 1-year long kind of plant process operator certificates in partnership with industry, where we're actually doing work that's more like an apprenticeship structure, where they're beginning to work within a company while they're doing the training. It is really possible to shift in a new career direction within 1 year. Now, often it's a significant 1-year commitment. So, you know, folks need to understand that. It's, you know, sometimes you can do it part-time, but in some ways the best thing to do is to come in and really dig in and kind of really make that.
Paint a picture for me. Let's take something that I don't know what the hell process technology is. You mentioned that one. Okay. Let's say I say, okay, first of all, tell us what process technology is, and then tell me about what this year from hell is going to look like.
So process technology is really, if you look at sort of what refineries do, what food processors do, what also water wastewater does, it's the control of fluids in certain kinds of manufacturing processes. So the process operators basically control the machinery, monitor the machinery where they're moving sort of petroleum products around through the system.
Great. What's the year going to be like now? So I say that sounds cool. It sounds important. It's under the radar. We're unsung heroes. We're making sure that the food that we get to eat is healthy and done efficiently. You know, that's all great. And as I'm excited, I'm working with my hands. So now what's my year going to look like? Preparing.
Well, surprisingly, and actually, you know, a lot of folks think of vocational education as something that's sort of like for the dumb kids. Yeah, I think, you know, you're talking about really high-level science, you're talking about chemistry, talking about high-level mathematics. It is as educationally rigorous as really any other pathway in college.
Okay, so that's critical. Now, a lot of folks, including people with PhDs, are bad at science and bad at math. Let's take the more typical person who might consider this career as a process worker who, you know, makes sure that the pipes are working and everything is working fine in the food processing plant. And I'm not going to pass, I can't even do algebra. I'm not going to do calculus. I'm going to probably fail in chemistry. What advice do you have for a person like me, Mark?
I think the one thing is to think in, when people think that they're bad at math, one of the things we found is that people, a lot of people aren't bad at math. They didn't do well at it because they didn't understand it or didn't like it. And part of what we see is when people really understand how math can be used, how it can be applied, that's really important to help them get through it. And we have students, math is really important in machining. And we have students that were bad at math, but once they can see how it's used and actually apply it to machining a part, they actually start to get it, and then they do well at it. So the job itself, these career training itself, help people get through math because they understand why it's useful.
So one of the things that we're trying to do in relationship to that is sort of, there's kind of two fundamental strategies we're looking at to really, because we have an accessibility issue, and we know that. 70% of the community college students are below college level math and English coming in, which doesn't mean they can't do it. It just means that they had a bad experience in the past. So one thing we're doing is we're trying to build, you know, certificates that allow folks to maybe kind of to have an entry level certificate they can do in one semester or in 1 year that includes math and English that's contextualized for the job they're going to do. What we find is when students actually learn basic skills in that way, they actually accelerate. They actually learn math and English much faster, and it makes them, they're also like 300-400% more likely to complete transfer level math and English later on. So having these sort of stackable certificates where someone can come in and say, I'm going to do this semester. The coursework is relatively simpler, but it ties directly into something that's more complex and long term. It allows them to have a set variety of goals for themselves, and allows us to sort of teach those things in ways that really makes it more accessible to
them. So in plain English, what you do is you try to get some of this higher level math sugar-coated and contextualized, meaning and made practical and embedded in courses. Do you get pushback from the colleges, the math departments or whatever, saying, hey, you're taking courses away from me, Professor Hassenpfeffer, and you're teaching this lightweight course that really is not the equivalent of our course. You're watering it down. That's not fair. Do you get pushback?
The colleges have operated in a certain way for a very long time, yep. And I just have to acknowledge that up front.
Sure.
However, at the same time, I think we're increasingly acknowledging that these students that some people may feel like, well, why are we giving sections over to those students? Those are our students. That's the vast majority of our students. And it makes more sense to increase completion and increase success by contextualizing those courses and embedding it in a program of study that has some vocational relevance than it really does to sort of leave them decontextualized floating around out there.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. The topic, manufacturing careers here in the Bay Area, and truly under the radar but legitimate set of pathways for folks, especially, not as they were saying, not for people who are not smart, but for actually a fair amount of intelligence and diagnostic ability is available. We're talking about the pockets of opportunity, whether you or someone you love is interested in this or simply just kind of a interested citizen in what the present and future of the Bay Area is economy-wise. This should be for you. My guests are Mark Martin, who is the Director of Advanced Manufacturing Workforce Development at Laney College, and Randy Tillery, who is the Senior Dean of Workforce and Economic Development for the Contra Costa Community College District. I was fascinated by the five, your top five. I'll repeat them for those who are just joining us, and then Mark, I'm going to want to get yours. Mm-hmm. These are the top five areas that Randy Tillery thinks represent the ideal combination of good job market, good working conditions, his top five for the Bay Area. Industrial maintenance, and we're going to get definitions of these a minute or two. Biotech manufacturing, medical devices, process tech, and process operations. Mark, what are your top five?
I'm going to stick with that. I think that industrial maintenance, which basically is maintaining equipment at a facility, at a factory, at a refinery. That's kind of the basic idea of industrial maintenance. But yeah, I think Randy and I have worked together, and we have that same mind. But these things stand out.
Great. Okay. Let's get to the definition. So industrial maintenance, that's not somebody who's the janitor. That's who's like what they used to call a stationary engineer. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's taking big, heavy equipment, printing mm-hmm. presses, major processing, food processing machines, robots and stuff, and maintaining and fixing them. Is that correct?
Exactly. So that's, as I mentioned with the water, wastewater, it's maintaining that equipment that is working in factories. And this is the sort of stuff that you can't outsource. You have machinery equipment in these factories. They need to be maintained. So industrial maintenance mechanics or industrial maintenance machinists, they're the ones that maintain and make sure that equipment continues to work well.
Put you on the spot. If I was your brother and I said, that sounds cool to me, I want to do it. Now, would you send me to the tech shop in Crucible? Would you send me to which community college program?
I mentioned the tech shop in the Crucible because they have, short courses that you can quickly get into. But as I said, I would also encourage people to definitely look at the community college.
Which one?
Laney College has excellent programs in machining, industrial maintenance, biomanufacturing. DVC is just getting one started back up. They had shuttered it a few years ago.
Why? Bay Area has long been a center for this. Why would DVC have shut it?
It's partly because of economic downturn and looking at that. And I think it's also a little bit of short-sightedness on their part of looking at, they had to make trade-offs, but of what was going to happen when there was going to be a turnaround. And there was a lot of kind of negative publicity, I guess, about manufacturing and where manufacturing is. And so I think that's what happened. But now they see that this is going to be needed, and so they're opening their program back up.
So you mean, I know that there has been tremendous pressure to increase the amount of academic rigor per se, explicitly. And so the colleges are trying to get more students to transfer to academic bachelor's degree programs in liberal arts or whatever, which have been deified. And so what you're saying is that there's been a recognition that that has relatively failed for lots of the transfer rates are unbelievably bad. And so given the oversupply of bachelor's degree liberal arts graduates and the undersupply, relatively speaking, of people with skilled technical careers, they're backtracking on that and resurrecting some of these career technical programs at community colleges. Is that fair?
I think it's it's a recognition, not so much that transfer is a failure as it is that, that career relevance in the first 2 years of someone's educational experience may actually be a better gateway for transfer than just having someone come in and say, like, oh, you're going to be a transfer student, and having it not actually mean anything. I mean, so some of the survey work we're doing with students in our vocational areas shows that students who complete 12 units within a vocational training program at the community colleges seem to transfer to four-year colleges at a higher rate than our overall population, meaning that having that relevance gives them a purpose, the ability to identify ongoing education work that may really help them get to where they want to go because they know where they want to go.
I had read that the percentage of kids in a traditional transfer program, the transfer is about less than 10%. How much more, what is the transfer rate of people who have completed 12 units in a career tech program in a community college to transferring to a four-year college?
So preliminary survey results that we're getting, so this is work that's really been the last couple of years since we're trying to increase response. We're getting 50% response rates to actually the surveys we're doing with sort of CTE students, and we're showing 25% transfer without actually transfer being an embedded part of the program they're in. So what that means is there's something there that we can do that might be very interesting in terms of thinking about the relationship between two-year and four-year educational systems.
Interesting. Now let's go back to, you said biotech, was something you wanted to say,
well,
Mark?
A couple of things. And, you know, I think, you know, with DVC opening us up, I use the term short-sighted. I should have, you know, part of the thing is that...
That's my college.
Yeah. Well, no, and I do. I mean, they have a budget crunch, and they had to make calls. And so I guess, you know, really it was a matter of calling. Of, you know, do you want, you know, where do you want to focus your resources? So they have a lot of good programs. So I do want to say, but they're looking at, you know, bringing their program back. But we also have De Anza down in, Cupertino. Mm-hmm. Down there has an excellent CNC program, one of the top ones. They just got a new $350,000 CNC machine, 5-axis cutting edge, top of the line, and, you know, part of that was donated, part of the costs were donated, but the companies, because they recognize the importance of making sure they have trained employees to run these machines. And also Chabot College in Hayward, excellent program as well.
Great. Let's back up.
Yeah.
CNC, it's the numerical control.
Correct.
Tell us what it is, exactly what you do if you have a job as a CNC operator.
Okay. What you do as a CNC operator is you work, you're cutting metal. Back in, you know, until recently, this was all done manually on manual machines, which are still used. But CNC allows the computers to control the cutting tools. And so as a CNC machine operator, you'll come through, you'll look at the drawings, you'll see what needs to be done. You can set up or program, and it involves programming the equipment, setting up the material in the machine itself, and then also running the machine to actually produce the cut part.
There are actually two criticisms that have been leveled in this kind of program. One is CNC has actually been around for many, many decades. Mm-hmm. It is not new. And so, but what happens is because the universities or colleges can usually accept, notwithstanding this $350,000 new donated piece of equipment or partially mm-hmm. donated, most often the colleges are behind the equipment that they're using to train people on is obsolete. Mm-hmm. And it is really and I'm taking a very liberal standpoint here, it is really giving a free handout to corporations to be doing what corporations should be doing. They should be training the people on the jobs in their companies using their cutting edge machines, not making universities or colleges, which is supposed to elevate and not do this rigorous career training. So you give them, so the community colleges, not only are they abdicating their role of elevating the citizenry, but they're teaching them using obsolete equipment and subsidizing corporate America. What would you say to that criticism?
Well, you're presuming that colleges shouldn't be a part of economic development in our regions and sort of in our country. And I think that, you know,
A big supporter of career and technical education, but that argument has been made a number of times on this by callers to this very show.
Yeah, I mean, the tact we're taking is that the goal of education should be to enrich our communities at all levels, so that we should be helping folks across the spectrum in our communities really access sustainable wage jobs in careers where there's going to be strong jobs growth and where there's really a career pathway. And that secondly, we should be working with employers and industry in different ways that help us take the burden off of them to think about how do we train these people who come in with basic skills that are really honestly all over the map. They're not tooled up to do that, so that they can do what they're best at, which is growing their businesses and creating jobs. That if we can support sustainable job growth, if I can help a company fill its 50 middle-skilled jobs that it can't fill today, then they can create the other 50 jobs tomorrow.
Let's go to the phones. This is a good place to go to the phones. I know there's more, much more. We're going to talk some more. I'm going to hold you on for a few minutes more. We're having a good time. I'm having a good time. You having a good time?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Great.
All right, good. So, dear listeners, I hope you're having a good time, too. I am fascinated by this because I do love the intersection of practicality with learning. And these guys are there where, you know, I am a guy who loves it. Right next to my bed, I'm reading a book of philosophy. But that's because I have the luxury. I'm old. I have money. I can afford to take time to do that. But people who are younger and don't have money need to have that intersection. They want to grow. They want to be thoughtful human beings, thoughtful citizens, better mathematical reasoners, but they also need a job. And the intersection of that is the modern day manufacturing and under the radar opportunity here in the Bay Area. So I'm talking here with Mark Martin, who's Director of Advanced Manufacturing Workforce Development at Laney College, and with Randy Tillery, Senior Dean of Workforce and Economic Development for the Contra Costa Community College District. And now you have a chance to ask them, and perhaps me, a question. If you or someone you love is intrigued by a career in which you are going to be involved in manufacturing and want to see how it applies to you personally, this is the time to call. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While we're waiting for the calls to come in, we've made a number of mentions very briefly of biotech. Biotech we normally think of as a PhD job, as a principal investigator in a research. But there are many, many, many more jobs at the bachelor's or at the associate degree level or certificate level in biotech manufacturing. Which one of you wants to tell us what those jobs are like?
Well, I think one of the things that, like at Laney, we have, we have programs, one semester, two semester, and 2 year programs. So kind of a career path. You can go for one semester, a year, and then at each point, step out into a job. And they can be quality control technicians. They can be biomanufacturing technicians where you're actually running the test for the particular companies, up to starting moving up to biomanufacturing supervisor, supervising other employees on, applying these tasks. So there's a range of different, kind of short-term education levels that you can go into for these jobs.
I had long heard of a program in biotech manufacturing at Cal State East Bay. What's the – do you know about that program? You're both looking a little quizzical, so let's back off on it. Anyway.
It's not my strength, but I know that certainly that the colleges, again, at Laney and at the other colleges at Offal Biomanufacturing, will have very good connections with those different colleges.
Yeah, I mean, biotechnology is interesting because it is one of the areas where there's been a lot of regional collaboration in terms of redesigning kind of the training continuum to match what employers need, partly because there was such explosive growth in biotechnology manufacturing for a number of years, with Bayer and Bio-Rad Genentech. And Genentech, yeah, other companies like that. And in fact, the Bay Bio Institute based in San Francisco has been really instrumental in helping organize the employer community and really helping them work with the colleges around designing programs that really meet their needs. And that it is surprising how much work there is for people who have a basic kind of biotechnology, like one semester, 1 year long certificate program. And there's been a lot of good work at places like Solano and Laney in terms of articulating those with 2 year degree programs and then the transfer pathways into CSU and other places.
Randy mentioned in passing baybio.org. Baybio.org is a gold mine of job listings and companies and Bayer brown bag lunches, all kinds of things. You want to get yourself into that community. That's a nice way to get in to potentially for when you're trained, especially if you want a job through the back door where you're more likely to get a better job than if you simply apply on their website, going to one of those baybio.org lunches is good. You're scrunching up your face, Randy.
No, I'm just sort of thinking because one of the things that the reason biotechnology is strong and industrial maintenance is strong is because of the involvement of employers and industry in the actual design and implementation of those programs. And I would really urge listeners to look for that. So when they're going to a college, asking you what employers are you working with, I think it's okay to be an informed consumer.
Great
consumer
point.
And ask those
Great
questions.
Point. Don't lose that. That's exactly right. As you go shopping for your training program, asking that question, which employers do you work with and what percentage of people who complete the program are employed by those entities, by companies like that. Great point. Now let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko with Randy Tillery and Mark Martin. What's your question or comment for them? It's your turn on the air.
So, my name is Louis Quillen. I actually work with Mark at Laney College. And I would just like to comment on the perspective that, we're doing the job of companies and that basically, the taxpayers are putting the cost of the companies to pay. What we are doing really is preparing people to learn in these trades. we provide them with an entry-level access to the trades, and especially with the technology that you guys have been talking about, all of our students understand, basically, that when one form or another, whether it's on the job or by continuing to go to school, they're going to be going to school the rest of their life. And what we do is provide them the tools to learn and to keep current, not just entry-level skills, but the basic skills tools and the ability to keep learning and to have that attitude. And that's what these companies are after also, is people that are willing not just to come in and run a machine, but to build into shop floor leaders, because the workforce is changing. You know, the guys running the machines, pushing a button, those jobs are gone. And we're not training people for those jobs. We're training people for high-level technical jobs that probably 25 or 30% of the technology changes every 3 to 4 years. And that's what we're training people for, is to learn and adapt to that technology.
Thank you very much for the call. You guys got a comment? Or?
Well, I think, you know, I think Lewis points out at one point you mentioned about, you know, the companies being responsible for it. One of the things we have in the Bay Area is one of the things manufacturing isn't so noticeable is there are not as many huge companies doing manufacturing. I think Tesla is, you know, an example of a huge company, you know, an important company in this area. But we have lots of small companies. You know, there's like 65% of the companies are under 100, you know, 100 employees. So you have these small companies that don't have the resources to have their own training program, and they're working with us and helping us out and supplying knowledge, supplying materials, and also they'll be supplying jobs for apprenticeship programs. So we're working with bringing that back into the Bay Area for manufacturing apprentices.
And I think it's important to note that employers are doing this work, and they have a role to play. I mean, Mark's talking about internship. We're seeing more companies come to us wanting to say, you know, we if you can get them to here, then we can bring them in. We'll continue the education and then work collaboratively with them. You know, and you know, companies have been an important part of this work. So the reason we have a process technology program at Los Medanos College is because Dow Chemical came to us and said, we're tired of flying to Kentucky to hire process technicians. Why can't we do this here in the Bay Area?
It's an interesting point you made, Mark. You said that most of the employers of these manufacturing jobs are under 100 employees. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, job seekers are really, they're easy to know about Schnitzer Steel or, you know, some big, relatively big companies. But how do they find out about these smaller companies and where there's less likely to be so much competition for the job?
You know, certainly, you know, you look on the jobs boards. A lot of times these smaller companies will actually advertise on Craigslist as well. But I think, you know, like I created a website that showed, you know, Bay Area manufacturing companies. And so, you know, it's difficult to find sometimes as far as finding out, you know, where this – and I think part of the thing we're going to be working on with the grant money that we received is making that data more accessible to people so they can find out where these companies are located. Because, again, there are – some of them are small, you know, mom-and-pop shops, so to speak, but, you know, others – you know, there's medium-sized ones that are out there, too, that people can look for.
Okay, we're going to talk about grants later, but let's say your grant in a moment. But the let's say right now, let's say I completed a program in CNC, mm-hmm. you know, computerized numerical control right. or processing or industrial maintenance. And let's say I'm not the greatest student in the world. I'm not going to get hired by the premier company. I've been intrigued now about these under-the-radar, under-100-person companies. Before you create this website, what would you tell, if I'm your brother, what do you tell me to do to find these companies? How would I go and how to go about getting hired by them? What would you really tell me to do?
I would tell you to, you know, talk to your instructors at your community colleges, because that's one of the things that community college instructors, you know, do. They work with industry. They work with local industry, so they have connections into those. And so a lot of times these companies will be calling us and saying, hey, do you have students you can recommend? Do you have, you know, students? And we'll post the jobs. You know, look for trade organizations. So there's a National Tooling and Machining Association group that just actually has recently started back up because of the resurgence of manufacturing in the area. You know, try to find out about those and attend meetings, because that's where companies come to meet. And so you can look through that, and then also just, you know, look around and see if, you know, some of the wonders of the internet are the ability to connect through, you know, LinkedIn and maybe even Facebook and other things to find people to talk to.
Before we go back to the phones, you talked about this grant. The grant, I mentioned it at the top of the show. It's called Design It, Build It, Ship It. Randy Tillery, you want to tell us what that is and how will it benefit human beings listening to this show? What should they do with that information?
Well, I mean, I think that your point about how do people actually both find the right kind of training program, and then they how they find the actual job, how they get connected up to these small and mid-sized companies, is an area where we have to do a lot more work and connect the dots a lot better. We have a lot of powerful training tools. People don't know how to get to them, and then they don't know how to get from that from there into the industry very often. So the goal of the grant, it's a $15 million grant over 4 years. It's 10 community colleges, 5 workforce investment boards, CSU East Bay, UC Berkeley, and the East Bay Economic Development Alliance, is to begin to work at a deeper level with employers in our region in advanced manufacturing to really kind of be sure that to align the training programs to their actual needs and to create better systems for students to get referred into these programs and then to actually get employment. Because we have a lot of disconnections in the region between the work of one-stops and community colleges and the K-12 system and economic development. Can we link that together into some kind of more powerful system?
So it sounds like that's a future thing. It's not relevant. Now let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco with Randy Tillery and Mark Martin. What is your question or comment for them?
Hello?
Yes, hello, it's you.
Oh, hi, yeah. I've been seeing a lot in the media about 3D printing, and people are saying that 3D printing is going to revolutionize manufacturing, and I'm just wondering if you could comment on that and also say if there is a place around that trains in that area. Thanks.
Great question.
Yeah, so certainly 3D printing is a technology that is advanced and it's been used in a lot of different areas. A lot of it is for prototyping, although they're starting to see the use of 3D printed parts, which are basically you can kind of create one-off parts by building them up layer by layer and in using those parts in actual, not just prototypes, but actual usable manufactured parts. I think we're still quite a ways off from that having a large impact on manufacturing from the standpoint of most goods being made by 3D printing.
Well, 3D printing, of course, I didn't really know this myself until a few years ago. Prototyping means some inventor has got this idea, and it could be within a company, or it could be a garage guy or whatever, and he or she has got to go and make one model to show to companies to demonstrate proof of concept. It's really, really expensive to create prototypes. 3D printing, which, as I understand it, really the cost of these 3D printers is coming way down, and it's going to be very much possible to indeed make a prototype, that one item, very easily. Also, it has reached the news, unfortunately, in this, the people who are against, who are saying that additional gun control legislation is going to be meaningless, they're pointed to the fact that there is already people have used 3D printers to create guns, and it has been demonstrated to shoot 85 rounds of, then it blows up. It blows itself up. So it'll be almost impossible to keep track of it. So the point is that these 3D printers is really a wave of the future, and because it originated here in Silicon Valley, it is an area that perhaps, if it is an area where small-run manufacturing is going to grow, it's not going to replace the millions of replications of toys that are made in China, but it will for things that, like medical devices, where the runs are 50, 100, 200. It may be that 3D printing is a next-wave career. It's not hit the ground yet. But it wouldn't hurt for somebody who's really trying to be ahead of the curve to really understand that world, so when it does become a little more practical, they are ready to jump in. Does that make sense, you guys?
Well, I think any situation where you have to produce something, but each one has to be customized. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see 3D printing in places like dentist office, where they actually will be able to make implants right there at the dentist.
Yeah, and I think as far as preparing for that, really the training for that is more around the 3D CAD work. So if you would take a CAD class, computer aided design class, such as SolidWorks or Pro Engineer, these different software packages, that's where you should prepare for that, because what you do is you design on the computer and then you send it to the printer. But I still think we're a number of years off before there's a large number of employment in that area. Mm-hmm. Although, again, 3D CAD work is being utilized now. So if you learn that now, you could get a job. And as we move to the use of the 3D technology, 3D printing technology more, those job skills will transfer into that.
Makes great sense to me. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco with Randy Tillery. Mark Martin, what's your question or comment for them?
Hi, I'm Jackie in Oakland, and I work with K-12 programs, after-school programs in low-income schools throughout the Bay Area, out of the Alameda County Office of Ed. And I just want to second what you, every one of you has said about how important it is to make sure students experience ways to apply the math and science they're learning. So for any K-12 educators out there, I just want to give that encouragement, because that's what gives them the motivation to persist through complicated things and to keep trying and learning. And you all are seeing it at the community college level, and that can start way low. And I just wanted to say there's also a big initiative to bring more what they call STEM, science, technology, education, and math into after school. And it's perfect because there's a chance there to do the fun applications and the putting together, in particular, science, math, and service learning. Because what we're seeing is that when kids see that what they do makes a difference, that they could help someone, and I have give you lots of examples about that. I recently saw a panel of girls who, that's exactly what they said. They're working on things that can actually help. So the real world has problems. We have kids who want to help, and it makes sense to put them together in service learning around science and math. So.
Jackie, I completely agree and love your quote. Stay with me. I have a question back for you.
Yes.
You know, my wife's a superintendent in Napa, and she's under great pressure to have more and more kids complete all the A to G requirements, or the requirements for admission to the University of California. And that is, and most, there are very few courses that will embed, for example, all of the material in the new Common Core standards for algebra and for geometry and for pre-calculus. What do you say if I am a kid who's in the 8th grade or the 7th grade or the 9th grade, and I'm still struggling with arithmetic? I can't really understand probability or the differences between the tens place and the hundreds place and the thousands place. And now they're telling me I got to do algebra, and, you know, within the very rigorous Common Core standard, which is even harder algebra than it was in the past. And I say to you, and I'm listening to Jackie, and I say, oh, yes, I want to learn my math in a practical career context, and I want to do service learning. I want to make the world better. But that course is making me take all this academic stuff. What do you say to me, Jackie?
Find an after-school program.
Isn't that sad?
I'll give you an example. Is Mouse Squad is one that's all across the state. They have, third, I think, through maybe fourth through 12th graders who have taken apart computers. And these are not students that are, they don't ask them what grades they got in math. So I think finding the motivation and finding opportunities, finding community resources that are working with kids, ways to get involved, there aren't enough of them, and I think that's, we're all trying to create more of those. And I know Bay Bio and Exploratorium and many people are around the table, all around the state, trying to create these opportunities for K-12 students. And I guess I think that the hope for the Common Core, which I know your wife knows well, is that the goal of the Common Core is to have students who can think and problem solve. So if we do it right, then there will be more applications and ways to experience real-world problem-solving during the school day, too.
Jackie, I've looked very carefully at the Common Core standards, and while that's a very nice theory, there are so many standards that are also abstract and hard, and every imaginable hard math abstract concept, there ain't going to be much room for practicality. But, Jackie, I thank you very much for the call. Do you guys have any comments about the K-12 world of career preparation and its interfacing with the academic world?
Yeah, I mean, it is very important, and we're certainly working in the community college levels have to reach down into the high school and the middle school to create these career paths. And there's organization over in Oakland called Career Ladders Project, which is funded by the state, and Linda Collins there has been a great supporter of our manufacturing initiatives, but also the initiatives to do this kind of career ladders where we work with the high schools and the middle schools. I think it's really important that we have these programs, these hands-on programs in schools, and over the past 10 years, they've been decreasing, but over the past 10 years, like machining programs have been cut in half in the U.S. and in the California. 1,200 high schools, we have about 70 machine programs left. But we're starting to see some interest in bringing them back. San Francisco is actually looking at bringing back a machining program. Oakland is looking at it. Napa is actually looking at is starting one up. So there's a turnaround. There's a acknowledgement that these types of hands-on programs are very important.
So it's, you know, this when we're talking about students and young people, it reminds me now about engineering. You know, we have for the last decade at least seen massive outreach to encourage more kids, especially girls, to major in engineering. And that's frankly always puzzled me. Because while, yes, I'm well aware that the Department of Labor statistics say that the market is still good for engineering in certain, like in mechanical or in certain software engineering, but logically, it seems to me, you know, it's been said that India and China are nations with a billion engineers. Their culture values engineering above almost everything else. And no matter what, you know, the Boston Consulting Group study says, you know, there is such an enormous Grand Canyon of difference between not only the cost of an American engineer and one in China or India, but there's so many benefits that American workers get that are expensive for employers to provide. Now Obamacare, Paid Family Leave Act, workers' comp, etc. It is hard for me to imagine. Certainly somebody who went to majored in engineering at Berkeley or Stanford is going to be fine, but somebody who it was not a superstar, went to Cal State, he started a community college, transferred to, managed to be one of the even 25% who transferred to a four-year college at Cal State East Bay, major in engineering, and their work life is going to be 40, 50, 60 years. I worry that after enduring that really hard major, defying the odds, that he or she is going to have a hell of a time competing for jobs. Am I missing something?
I think anytime you think, you know, one particular thing is the answer, you start to have problems. So I mean, what's interesting to me about engineering is that the STEM skills to get ready to go into engineering are very similar to the STEM skills in machine technology, process technology, or any one of a number of career pathways actually working in advanced manufacturing. So what we should be doing is demonstrating relevant opportunities for students beginning at the K-12 level and identifying all the potential pathways that they could pursue and say, here are the core competencies, not necessarily A through G, but in terms of really being able to do this industry, or this industry.
Let's say we're using jargon. STEM, of course, is science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yes.
And A to G are the traditional academic rigorous courses, you know, whether it be algebra, geometry, pre-calculus, chemistry, biology, physics, et cetera.
Yeah, I guess I would have to kind of disagree with the assumption that, you know, that engineering is not a good career path. I wouldn't, you know, I would encourage people, I would encourage my kids, you know, anybody I know that, you know, engineering and these technical careers would be a good career path. I think the most important thing is it's something of interest to them. But as far as, you know, what's happening in China and India, we see, you know, costs increasing. You mentioned the BCG or Boston Consulting Group report that actually says that there's by 2015, you know, stuff that is made in the U.S. that is being sold here in North America, so it doesn't have to be shipped overseas, that the U.S. and China will reach some sort of cost parity. And I know there's some, you know, some concern about is that true, but I think we're starting to see that on the ground. We're starting to see companies bringing jobs back from China because they see the cost increase in China, the shipping costs, and the logistics costs. You talk to people at, you know, any major company that deals, works, has manufacturing or shops overseas, they will tell you the difficulty in the communication, the travel. It may seem like it's trivial, but it costs. It costs in terms of their time. It costs in terms of quality of the product. It costs in terms of being able to customize products to get to your customers quickly. So there's a lot of cost to it. And what we're seeing is manufacturing coming back. And engineers are going to be a critical importance of that. China and India have a lot of engineers. A lot of their engineers are being used to produce infrastructure for the Chinese. Also manufacturing, but a lot of it is in their internal needs.
Yeah. So I think one of the questions is whether you have to go straight into like a four-year degree program to actually become an engineer. Because what we're seeing is that students come into a two-year process technology program, and partway through they come in thinking
at a community college.
Yeah, at a community college, they start out thinking, "I'm not good at science. I wasn't that into science." And after a year, they're like, science is kind of cool. I might really want to do this longer term. That's the ideal person to then become a chemical engineer. They really have providing the vocational relevance and then having them grounded in industry makes them a better engineer after 4 years than just going probably straight into a four-year engineering program.
Let's take one more call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco with Randy Tillery and Mark Martin. We're talking manufacturing in the Bay Area, training as well as jobs. What is your question or comment for him? Them.
Hello. I'm a Bakersfield College student, and I'm taking CNC milling class right now. I've taken machine tool processing. Also, I have a electronics technology certificate. And in Bakersfield College, all it takes is three classes, and then you can get a CNC certificate. What I see today is that nobody recognizes vocational. Everything is professional, professional, professional. There's only going to be so much room for professionals, and all these people that thought they were going to be professionals or have jobs as a professional aren't going to get them. And what happens is that these educated professionals, they won't drop down into the vocational jobs or anything. What do you think about that?
The question is, are with so many people getting professional degrees, I guess his question really ends is, how viable is that 12-unit certificate going to be? Somebody who's 30 or 40 or 50 doesn't have time to go for a couple of years without income. How viable will those CNC 12-unit certificate programs be for getting you a middle-class paying job?
I think it's a step. You know, it's a step in the right direction. I mean, you can get jobs with this 12-unit certificate, but then there's a path to go on to, you know, the full, you know, year program or 2-year program and step up as far as pay and your responsibilities. And I think, you know, the caller's right. There's 43% of the jobs in 2016 are projected to be middle skill jobs, ones that do not require a 4-year degree, whereas only about a third, of 30% or so are going to be 4-year degree type jobs. So those certificates that we're offering at the community college level are the types of certificates that are going to be, you know, the majority, or not the majority, but the plurality of the jobs are going to be in that area. And so definitely, you know, encourage you if that's what you enjoy and like to continue that path, because there's going to be jobs in these areas. Okay.
Well, thank you very much for the call. We're running out of time. I just want to, you know, I'm excited really about the prospects of, you know, it makes sense to me that there will be jobs in small run medical devices, in operating the processes of companies, whether it be valves or in food processing, valves and water treatment plants or food processing, fixing machinery. This all makes good sense to me. But what's puzzled me is, it seems to me that a program, you said it's going to require an intense full year or more. In the real world of human beings, it seems that the apprenticeship model, where you start by working at the elbow of a master, getting paid a subsistence, $8 or $10, and just so that you can barely live, but learning at the elbow in that very concrete context, and then supplementing simultaneously with a course rather than predominantly courses, and doing that over a 4-year period so that you – because when you compress it all into 1 year, just compressed learning primarily in the academic context, even if you contextualize it by talking about its application, is a less likely to be both economically practical for the students and less likely to result in a well-trained person. Why are apprenticeship programs per se that are centered around one-on-one working at the elbow not at the centerpiece of this reinvention of job training?
Well, I think one of the things is we have the community colleges there. They're able to give this training, but the second thing is they're coming back. Okay, we're actually Laney College, Chabot, and De Anza. We recently received a grant or submitted a grant and received it from the state to implement machining, CNC, and industrial maintenance apprenticeships here in the Bay Area. So we're going to be working with those three colleges, but also expanding to work with other colleges that are offering this training to have apprenticeship programs in manufacturing.
Do they not exist? I mean, isn't there a calapprenticeships.org that lists all kinds of apprenticeships that already exist?
Oh, there certainly are apprenticeships programs that exist, but as far as machining in the Bay Area, there's one small program union-based in the South Bay that is still around, and there's an excellent program up in the Petaluma area, North Bay, that we're working with them to kind of bring their model down here. And so the training is going to be through the community college level.
Randy Tillery, I want to give you the last shot. We're out of time, but I want to give you a softball, open-ended question. As you've been sitting here, you've been more patient and listening. I've been, for whatever reason, asking Mark a little more than half of the questions. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking about my listeners and the world of career technical education, What's the one thing that you want to tell my audience that you haven't, that hasn't yet been said, or something you want to emphasize?
Well, I just think it's they really need to explore what the colleges have to offer as a system and not necessarily what the college next door offers. I mean, one of the challenges of the grant that we have right now is that we're trying to make all the training in the East Bay at the 10 colleges that are in my grant available to anyone who lives in the East Bay. So that if you have the opportunity to do maybe a bridged biotech program at Contra Costa College, that links then to the one-year or two-year programs at Laney or Solano that really, you know, so don't just say, this is the college next door, that's where I'm going to go take courses.
How do they find out about that? Is there a website that lists all of the programs?
We're building that now. So that's kind of part of the work that we're doing.
Mark? There is one existing. The one that we're working on is going to improve on this, but there's one that they could look at now called the Bay Area Career Guide. So you could just search that, the Bay Area Career Guide, okay. And it lists career technical programs in the Bay Area.
Okay. Mark Martin and Randy Tillery, I want to thank you very much for being guests on Work with Marty Nemco.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we only have a couple minutes left. So what I want to do is we don't really have time for a call. I want to just tell you a story. Saturday night, I had to go. I hate going to these events, but I had to go to it with my wife, Barbara, to the Chamber of Commerce awards dinner. And they give awards to various businesses and various things. And I was struck by one thing. Every single one of the award winners was given the award because of what they, quote, gave back to the community, how much money they donated, how much time they donated, how many handicapped people they gave internships to, etc. And it's, the visceral reaction is, oh, how nice. But on second thought, I didn't think it was so nice. It so devalues the core of what businesses do. They gave one of the award winners was Biagi Brothers Trucking. These were two guys who were in Santa Rosa, started with two old beat-up trucks, moving wine from delivering wine from little family wineries to stores. And now they have hundreds of trucks in 9 distribution centers around the country. What they do as their core business is amazing. They enable every one of us to buy products that we want and need and get it and at an affordable price. And there's no status associated with it. He employs at a middle-class wage dozens of workers or hundreds of workers. And yet all they could find to praise was that he donated time to Queen of the Valley Hospital or that he had one green truck. I really think that the zeitgeist of the era is one that deifies the nonprofit over the for-profit, when in fact, as I look at the shirt that I bought at Walmart for $12, that was a business. It wasn't a charity. It created jobs and enabled me to afford something. I bought another sweater at the Gap, and Gap has. I do consulting for the Gap. They have hundreds of corporate social responsibility people who go to the Asian factories to make sure they're not being abused. They're providing good products at fair prices. This microphone I'm talking into, the headphones I'm wearing are Cost headphones that cost $25. They're fabulous. Is not the people who built your washing machine and the breakfast you had? These are not just charities giving back. Is it not time to balance this pendulum and honor the businesses for the work they do to provide products at an affordable price, the jobs they create for people? And frankly, with ethics that are unparalleled in the world. For me, I need to give a tip of the cap to those good businesses. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute career makeovers on callers. And let's say you've just gotten a promotion. You're a manager for the first time. But you worry, just because I was a good individual contributor doesn't mean I'm going to be a good manager. My wife, Dr. Barbara Nemco, and I are going to discuss the book, The First Time Manager. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
Marty Nemco's 6th book is out, How to Do Life. what they didn't teach you in school, and 1,000 of his published articles are free on his website. From there, you also can email him if you'd like coaching on your career or to comment on the program. His site, martynemko.com. That's martynemko.com. You can join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemko, right here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.